We keep on hammering the airline industry in terms of their carbon emission, but you won't believe it. The entire emission happening by the aviation industry is only 2%. Mm-hmm. And the buildings, actually the emission from buildings alone is more than 16%.
Welcome to Impact Investing TV.
Together, we will go on a global adventure, discovering the power of impact investing.
You will meet inspiring humans who are shaping a sustainable world for current and future generations.
There's no limit to the positive changes when we come together.
Let the journey begin. Hello, everyone. Today, we start with season 7.
Wow. Time goes fast. What is the theme we are going to have over this season?
Yeah, since this is summer and so many people are on vacation or planning to go to one, I guess most are thinking of faraway countries. So we will also do the same. This season is about impact investing worldwide, uniting for a sustainable future.
Very, very impressive. We are all excited to start.
And actually, I was thinking, shall we at least keep one point common through all of the seasons, like starting with your story?
Okay, maybe we can make a little difference and make it over our story. So just join me as we go along, okay?
All right, that sounds awesome. Let's start.
So I was thinking that today the news worldwide are split between pro and anti-West. And I guess that we from the West should acknowledge that. In my opinion, sometimes we have been overproud of our achievements.
That's so very true. For example, we have clean air and surrounding here in Switzerland because we have exported lots of dirty industries and activities to other faraway countries.
Especially on the field of sustainability, we are so proud that we are so good and much better than the world.
And when you travel, then you find out that so many places in the world are active in impact investing and doing even better, whether it's in Brazil slowing down deforestation, to China surpassing us with renewable energy production, to countries banning single-use plastic, etc., etc., etc.
So with this, let the audience guess which country we are going to explore today.
Let's. Any idea which country it is? Okay, I'll give you a hint. On the video, you might have recognized the incredible Masdar City.
So, I know. For those who don't know, it is the country of our guest of today, United Arab Emirates.
Correct. So, let's welcome our amazing guest, Mr. Maher Al-Kaabi.
Thank you very much, Sveta and Ben. I'm honored to be here with you guys. So, it was lovely to see you guys again.
It's our pleasure, and thank you so much for your time in joining us today. Let me briefly introduce you to our audience who might not know you yet. So Mr. Maher Al-Kaabi is a visionary leader and a seasoned banker with over 30 years of experience in the banking, IT industry, and family business. You, Maher, have extensive expertise in board membership, Islamic banking, wholesales, consumer banking, risk management, finance, operations and technology, sales, distribution and business development. You also have a deep knowledge in innovation and trends in the generation and utilization of data sets and of new technologies.
Is there any sector he's not experienced in?
Not really. So I think Maher has been really very well experienced, and now as a chairman of board of governments of a Star International School and co-founder of Blink, also now engaged as an advisor to the group chairman of the Al-Sarkal Group of Companies.
So welcome back.
Thank you very much. Very long introduction. Thank you very much.
But if we would have gone through the whole, then we would have been busy the next 5 minutes talking about you. So I wanted to start with the first question. That as a leader in the banking industry, can you share a pivotal experience that shaped your strategic approach to banking operations?
I think I really had the good benefit to work with Citibank when I started. Like prior to that, I started accidentally because I'm a software engineer. So I worked in a company to develop softwares. The founders over there, they were much older than I am. And what they did, they said, okay, they saw me developing these programs and that will link it to Citibank itself and how the banking industry shaped up. And it cemented some of the views I had about life. So I was started developing programs and packages for real estate, accounting and inventory, so forth in 3 weeks time. And the founder, one of the founders was saying it, how come the 8 years old experienced guy in my company, he's taking 3 months to create it and you're making it only in 3 weeks. So I told him, look, I always learned that, you know, how do we do the next innovation things? So I used the program for my benefit rather than me becoming a slave to the program. So I always carried forward in my life is all about how do we constantly innovate and how do we constantly improve and remove the cycle time. So now when I work at Citibank, and Citibank is a university, and to my benefit, when I worked over there, I've seen how structurally a corporation is really structured over there. And they had a very good structure of everything. So one of the main ethos they had is, how do you constantly innovate? And one of the beautiful things they had, a city, and a lot of people don't know about the thing, they had a separate company just for invention. It exists till now, has a separate website. It's called City Ventures. Their sole job is to come up with new innovative products and even inventions. So to give you a few examples, the ATM machine that we see today, it's an invention of Citibank. Credit card is an invention of Citibank. The call center concept is an invention of Citibank. The global transaction banking services that we have globally today, how the wire transfer happened, it's an invention of Citibank. Citibank was the first bank actually to develop a clear the bureau score for the US government in 1955. So that tells you that innovation is constant, nothing stops. So those are the things that, you know, cemented my views when I joined Citibank, to be honest with you. The other thing is, during my time then, when I joined Citibank in 1993, it was all about client centricity. Is make sure whatever you do and you develop, keep the client in your mind, which exactly what Apple is doing with their golden circle. So they go back to the client and it says, okay, what is the client work? And let's reverse engineer and work with the client once. So these are the two key things I would say that really got cemented even further when I worked at Citibank.
Amazing. And so now we know you've been recognized for your innovative approach in the banking sector. You just gave amazing examples. And also especially in the field of Islamic banking, which is very new to the values of impact investment. So what is your guiding philosophy when it comes to innovation, and how do you inspire your teams to think outside the box?
It's a kind of a long question, but it's a very deep one, to be honest with you, because, you know, it has multifaceted to do. The reason why I moved to Islamic banking is from faith perspective, and that was in 2008. Although I was looking for Islamic banking for quite some time, the reason being Islamic banking does not look what is in it for them, but they also balance what the client and customer needs are. A classical example to be, in case the customer cannot pay, they don't bombard them with interest. We call them profit. So there isn't something called the compound profit in you. So the profit mechanism stops. So that means whatever profit was there, that's what you accumulate and you need to pay. Unlike the conventional banking, if you don't pay your debt, the profit will keep, the interest will keep on going on and piling up to the extent that sometimes it may exceed the principal amount itself. So that's the exciting thing about thing. Now, I was blessed to work with great teams wherever I worked. So I was lucky to have great teams whenever I could and I had. So my simple philosophy is wherever I went, I always relied on four principles in making things happen. First, how do we invest in people? Number one, to make sure constantly you work with them, be close to them, have a clear communication to them. The more you communicate with them, the easier for you to transpire and make sure that your alignment is there all the time. Mm-hmm. Second is, how do we, when we do that, how would we embed the constant re-engineering in our DNA? So we always say, used to tell my team, look, this is what we're going to re-engineer today, but we need to be aware that once we re-engineer, the process will become, or whatever we have done will become stale in a period of time. So we need to have a mechanism that we go back and re-engineer what we have engineered. So if you look 20 years back, how the life has been, things have completely evolved and changed. The coming 5 years is going to be completely transformative with AI being there. And if people don't adopt, things will be very, very quickly and difficult for a lot of people. Right. Principle number three was, we always come up with policies, and a banking industry is very strong in coming up with policies, but they usually don't change. They become like curving on the walls.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not really good, because you need to adapt to what's happening. I'll give a very simple example. Earlier, if people wanted to open an account, he or she would have to come with his original ID to the bank. The ID will be taken by the personal bankers. He'll go at the back end and photocopy it, because he has to photocopy it himself or herself, bring it in saying tested scene original, and then send it to the operation department for an account to be open. Zap, 20 years today, you can open an account anywhere online. So these are the policies that people need to constantly evolve and change. So you need to constantly evolve your policies, work on them. Number four, what actually gels with all of them, is how do you constantly improve your processes? The message is, whenever you want to digitize anything, do not digitize a broken process. Fix the process and then digitize, so you can get the benefit of the digital thing that you're doing on. So these are key principles will make it happen. And all I would say is communication, communication, communication. Like we say, when you buy a property, it's all about location and location and location.
Yeah.
There isn't enough of communication. Sometimes leaders believe that they have the answers of everything. It's not correct, by the way. The answers lie down with your team. So your team, you need to create a channel of communication between your one downs and two downs and three downs, and make sure you have a spinal cord nervous system which is available. Mm-hmm. That communication has to go back and up again. And if you don't make this alignment all the time, you will not be able to motivate anybody. You will not be able to align the thoughts of what you want to do, what organizations you want to do, what the stakeholders are stake over there. And that's why this is how you make sure things happen, by clear communication all the time. That's a very, very important factor.
I think you're in the wrong country. You have to come here. We need you here more than ever. If I listen to you, you have to be in Switzerland to speak to our financial industry. I wanted to ask, for the sake of the audience who are not aware of it, if we can very easily define the difference, the basic two or three difference between the standard Western banking and Islamic banking, for those who are not aware of.
Sure. We always say there is a thin line between Islamic banking and conventional banking. The underlying principles of Islamic banking is, how do we make sure we're ethical in terms of how we are lending to, how we're impactful? Are we harming the environment in our lending that we're going to do? Are we harming people? Is it something that we're investing today? It's just going to be for the prosperity of the people and nation and so forth. So there's quite a lot of things that you need to do. And now you can see the conventional banking is catching up. But one of the main challenge which still remains, and a main difference between Islamic banking and conventional banking, is how do we make sure I don't penalize and I support people who are not able to pay? I talked about the compounding of interest. Not only individuals in US and globally, that when they're not able to pay, particularly the students, it's really killing their back. But you're talking about even countries today are in so much of debt, and they're not even able to pay their interest. So if we don't limit the interest amount, then it's going to be very difficult for people to come out of the debt. Once you're into the rabbit hole, it's a very long haul. It's not easy for you to come out. So that's an important thing to look at.
And Mahir, then how do you define impact investing? And what is the current state of this industry in your region?
I think things are evolving, and it's very fast evolving everywhere, to be honest with you. But there's a lot of greenwashing is happening as well. Earlier we never did marketing about ourselves. We never said that we're doing these kind of things. But I think the need of the hour for people to be inspired as well and to learn as well. So now we're talking about it quite extensively. So there were a lot of green bonds. We call them sukuk, which is Islamic bonds, have been issued. So the proceeds of these funds are going in for all the SDGs, the 17 SDGs we talk about. Of course, to some of them related over there, particularly when it comes to the area of circular economy, sustainability, eradicating poverty, education, clean water being there. And these are funding all the projects regionally and internationally as well, wherever is possible. So this is how the country has been transforming. There's have been a lot of uptake in the green bonds, green sukuk, I should say, which is a like of the bonds, Islamic sukuk. And this is how people are realizing slowly, slowly, what is the importance of investing and buying these kind of sukuks.
Okay. And the family where you're at this moment working, the Al Sarkal family, historically contributed to the development and economical growth of UAE. How and in what ways?
It's a very, very long story, to be honest with you.
Unfortunately, we have limited time, Maher, so you need to put it in a short way.
Sure. I'll try to be precise as possible. The Greek word is starting in 1847, but you know, the visionary leader that we have, the bilator of Nasser bin Abdul Latif al-Sirkal, he was a human being, to be honest with you. His main value was, how do I support the people around me in Dubai and in UAE, particularly, to be honest with you, to how to make the life of people easier? So he started with bringing the water pumps, so to make sure the water is available for people to drink. So that's one of the few things that were done in 1950s, as early as possible up there. When the group was established, we were part of bringing the Bridgestones. So we were the sole distributor for Bridgestone today. We're the sole distributor in the Dubai and the Northern Emirates. We contribute about 25% of the entire sales market for the tires industry. We also started Pepsi. So our chairman, Ahmed bin Nasser Sirkal, Ahmed bin Isa Sirkal, is a chairman of Pepsi, which is presented in Dubai. We also started the grandfather has started bringing the first telecom company or telephone to the UAE in 1957. And then that led to the development of Etisalat, the telecom company that we have today, which is the one of the 12th or 10th largest globally. So, and we, of course, we have the board membership. We also are a major shareholder over there. He also, the same year in 1957, started bringing generators for electricity to generate electricity in homes. And that led to the development of a company, a utility company in Dubai called Dubai Water and Electricity Company. And that was founded in 1961. Similarly, he founded another water electricity department in another state in Sharjah, a neighboring state for us as well. Also to facilitate the traders and kill the monopolies of one of the banks then, which was available, he created the first national bank. He co-founded one of the national bank, which was National Bank of Dubai. Which has got merged with another bank, Emirates International Bank, in 2007. So the bank was actually formed in 1963. So we're talking about almost 60 years we're celebrating of the bank history, which is Emirates NBD, one of the largest bank in the region. And also we have presence in Europe after buying quite a number of banks over there. The company also, the family also established another medium-sized bank, Commercial Bank of Dubai. They've established, of course, a philanthropic organization called Bayt al-Khair, where all the philanthropic opportunities happen over there to support people and so forth. They started Dubai Insurance, one of the insurance largest insurance company in the country. They started Isa Travel, which is to provide travel things, services. And then the company pivoted to a vertical which is related to sustainability and circular economy. And this has come up. Company called Blue, which would they offer soft services for buildings in terms of providing cleaning services for ACs and duct and so forth. With also that history led to the development of environmental plan, where all the food establishment that they have, the fat and oil grease, the food residual that's there, need to be treated. Earlier, all these FOGs, what we call them, the fat, oil, and grease, used to go to the municipal lines and would actually clog the municipal lines. So we went to the Dubai municipality, which the founder of the group used to sit on the board of this thing. I said, look, we will come up with a solution. And this is our chairman, Ahmed Sirkal, who said, okay, why don't we bring you a system whereby we solve the problem of the municipal problem today we have, and we take all the waste and we treat it, and we come up with the byproducts, which can be put in back into the economy. And similarly, of course, there was another plant where, as we working on, they were working on, how do we use cooking oils, which we use for fries and so forth, and convert into biofuel, which a plant should be opened in this month or maximum by August the next month. Of course, there's another important vertical, another vertical that we have, which is related to infrastructure, smart mobility. So the metros that we have in Dubai, the OEM contract since inception for the past 15, 14 years, we've been actually carrying it out that. And Ittihad Rail, which is our capital, we just have the launched last year. And probably if you had a chance to see the rail network that we have established, so we actually supplies the wagon, which are the carriages where all the freights are picked up on, and the locomotive, which comes from, we're the sole agent for them, comes from a company in the US called Progress Rail. And so forth. There are many other things that, you know, the company has been working on. As I said earlier, we require quite a lot of time to get into each one of them.
Wow, that's a
exactly.
lot.
Now I understand why.
Oh, short, long story, say short. Wow, it's amazing.
And now I understand why Maher is there, because just like he's multi-talented, the company is also in every sector. Maher, you mentioned all the sectors, but one sector I missed is renewable energy. Are you also involved in that?
Yes. One of the plant, as I mentioned very briefly, that we're trying to open, it's called biofuel plant, whereby all the used cooking oil that we have today in the country, we're hoping to work on them. And the plant should be operational by next month maximum in terms of commissioning and so forth. So the feedstock for that thing would be used cooking oil, and the residual, the what product, byproduct will come out with is biofuel. And that biofuel can be used for even for plane to because chartered planes on that, even the heavy machineries, trucks. So those are one of the things that are very impactful in terms of the renewable energy that we're coming up with.
Okay. And can I now ask you, please, a very controversial question? So
sure.
UAE is working, I mean, we were also there, is working very fast towards a zero carbon economy. And it seems, at least to us from outsiders, that you are fueling the transition with revenues generated from fossil fuel. Do you see impact investment as a way to diversify your economy?
One thing I think we need to recognize that the fuel, fossil fuel, will not go away very soon. I think it is important, and I think it's a key point that you mentioned already. We need to make sure, the two points I need to highlight over here. We need to really make sure that revenues that we generate not only make sure that we also clear up with alternative energy, but the itself of fossil fuel, how do we even become more changing the technology of coming up fossil fuel? That's very important as well. So there's a lot of work is happening over there in that area in terms of the country is working on, and Sultan Jaber is on top of the whole thing. And actually the guy is, poor guy is traveling, our minister, every month to 2-3 countries and just making sure the people are getting the pledges from all the countries. How do we quickly change and come up with renewable energy? But not only that, he's saying also, how do we actually modernize our current fossil fuels plants that we have today so they also become energy efficient while the journey is working on coming up with renewable energy? So UAE today is one of the largest producer of solar panels. So Abu Dhabi itself is creating a facility of 5.6 gigawatt tons from just solar panels. Wow. UAE is coming up with another 5 gigawatt tons. So cumulatively as a country, we're coming up to 10.6 gigawatt tons. We don't require that at this point of time. But there's a topic that we're discussing. How do we make sure that we have a regional grid that will be able to supply the excess renewable energy to the neighboring country so we can also help them in their transition?
Right. That's amazing. And this is what we said at the beginning, that countries outside of Europe, a lot of times are already developed much more in impact investing industries and sectors. So that's great to hear. And Maher, which futuristic impact technologies have you introduced to the region already? And maybe what are you planning to introduce?
Sure. The two things. One, existingly, that when we worked on, the one of the plant that we have, which actually treats all the used cooking oil, all the fat and oil grease, the FOGs we talked about. When we actually brought the machines from Europe, from Germany, unfortunately, the machine did not work. And of course, we understand that because the type of waste which is there in European countries are completely different than the type of waste that we have today over here. Mm-hmm. So we had to innovate our own. We had to carry out our own R&D as well to perfect that technology. Of course, that took us some time. So now we have our own private IP for that technology, which we're making sure that's there. But I think what's interesting factor over here that what we're working on is how do we drive, how we use AI to enable the sustainability to conversion happen faster. And I'm doing my doctorate on it as well as we speak. So what we're going to do is bring an AI model, work on a digital system whereby we monitor the entire market, all the food establishment that we have today, all the data will be fed into the system. And we do carry out a predictive modeling saying it, okay, which waste is coming up on seasonal factor from which food establishment? Because you're talking about various establishments, like you have hotel, restaurants, cafeterias, cafe shops, schools, all the people who are ever cooking, we need to know the data over there. And so once we have the data, enough data, we'll be able to do predictive analysis and we'll be able to capture all the waste and make sure that, you know, we maximize this waste coming into us so we can actually use it in the byproduct. That's one of the things we're working on. When we're also expanding, one of the things we want to think and work on, I was thinking of, is how do we use digital twins in terms of use energy efficient? I know technology actually sucks up a lot of energy, but also technology also fuels the renewable energy and the use of how you become efficient in your operation. So let's say if I have a plant in a country, let's call Kazakhstan, which one of the countries that we're trying to deal with. So how do I operate that plant if something going wrong, proactively do proactive maintenance while I'm sitting over here? I think one way of doing it is using a digital twin. So those are things and technology that we'll be working on in the near future.
Wow. One thing I also noticed when we were in UAE, that every second day you have a new building coming up. You are building so fast. So are you also looking into sustainable real estate project development?
Absolutely. Dubai and Abu Dhabi, I think the largest two cities, of course, and all the other Emirates are following the suit. There is a green building code which has been established, and all the buildings who are coming up, they need to adhere to these codes, which is making sure that these buildings are sustainable. And I think if we look at the general stats, which are issued by various consultants groups, McKinsey's and BCG's and all these things, they'll tell you the emission, which is happening from these buildings, particularly the old one, is quite large. We keep on hammering the airline industry in terms of their carbon emission, but you won't believe it. The entire emission happening by the aviation industry is only 2%. Mm-hmm. And the buildings, actually, the emission from buildings alone is more than 16%. Yeah. So yes, if we take care of how we build the new buildings now, that's something important. But I think what about the old buildings then? So what we're trying to do is do some of the retrofits, whatever is possible, so we can reduce the greenhouse gas emission from these old buildings. So one of the things we're doing for our real estate properties is going and do some energy saving parks. So wherever we have chillers, we try to install devices or we dose them with certain things that the use of energy becomes more efficient. So that means your greenhouse emission that it reduces. How do you conserve in terms of usage of water? How can you recycle the water back? How can you use the lighting system, which is on smart, on motion detectors and so forth. So these are some of the things that we're trying to do. And within the country, also the country is forcing and making these things happen.
I have another amazing question for you, Maya, because, you know, when I first traveled to UAE as a woman, I was not sure how my experience will be, but it was very positive. So I felt that gender equality is actually not at all an issue in your country. And so can you maybe give some concrete examples? How do you implement this UN SDG on gender equality and women empowerment? I see a lot going on this topic in your country right now.
I'd like to change it a little bit, which I also did the same thing when I was a chief guest invited and wrote to the B20 G20 in India, because India is hosting the G20 today. And it's also on YouTube. This is coming from our religion, and we believe in fairness between the men and women, to be honest with you. So I know a lot of people use the word equality. I personally believe, and as a believer, I believe it's not about equality, it's about how being to be fair. Mm. And that's why you don't see, I have not seen, at least to my knowledge, I've managed even thousands of people through my careers. We have never differentiated between men and women, where it comes to job, whether it is coming to salaries. And I was staggered to get to know that pay equality is not there in the Western world. And I was working on an international organization, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
We don't face that problem. We don't have that problem. So we're wondering why the people are talking about it, but we don't have this problem over here. So it emanates from our faith perspective. So we make sure that we treat everybody on a fair basis. And that's why we don't have a such problem for women. If you look at our cabinets, the ministers, two things you will realize. Most of them are very young. Mm. We're making sure to make sure that the country is young in terms of its thinking and progression. Most of our ministers are mid-30s, by the way. There are certain ministers who are in 20s, by the way. And we have enough female representatives as ministers, young, energetic, very strong, and we're blessed to have them to be over there. So we don't have that issue of women, what do you call it, equality? I call it fairness.
Wow.
That's great.
And you also forgot the age factor. In our side of the world, it's generally everybody 70 plus in the leadership role, which is really
and 80% men.
And men. So going to the next question.
I invite you to open the website of UAE Cabinet. Just go through the profile of the cabinets that we have, the ministers we have today. Look at their age, look at their gender, and look at their experience. Very young, very energetic. And look at, if you're able to see any of them, what they're doing. And I traveled with some of the ministers. I recently came from India with our ministers, and he was kind enough to invite me as well, Minister of Foreign Trade, Dr. Sani Ziyudi. He's much younger than I am, to be honest with you. He's this 30. But, you know, and he was telling me, we were in a plane together as well, and he was telling me, look, I have been flying in a week to two countries. Every week he was flying for the past couple of months in two countries because they're constantly working. One thing you will also realize over here is I always say this thing, and I think we're blessed that we have leadership, which is very strong, very wise. Started from the founders of the country, Sheikh Zayed, the late Sheikh Zayed bin Sultan Al Nahyan, and Sheikh Rashid bin Saeed Al Maktoum, and the current leadership that we have, the president of Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed, and also the prime minister, the vice president, Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum. They're very visionary people, but you know, vision alone does not make it happen. They're very good executors. They run the country as a corporate, and what's there in their mind, and they constantly say it, people is number one goal for us. Yep. Our population and the people who come and live with us over here, we need to make sure that we take care of them because these are the people who are building the countries. So whatever they do today, they want to make sure that the UAE is getting progress along with the people who are in the countries here are progressing constantly. So if ministers do not work and do not deliver, it is based on bureaucracy, nobody will stay in their job. They will immediately be flipped. So if you go and look at our ministers for the past 7 years or 8 years, you'll see those ministers who did not perform, they're no more there anymore. So it's a very merit-based thing. And this is what I expect them to do because they said, look, you're there to serve the people, to help the people so they can progress in their life. That's what we want to do. That's why they want UAE to be number one in all aspects of life. And we're strongly working on that.
Wow. And the whole world now knows that in November, December, you are hosting the COP28 in Dubai. So what, in your personal opinion, is very important or the importance of COP28 for your region?
From our perspective or from my perspective personally, first of all, I'd say I think COP28 or any other COP, first of all, is a platform that will bring together people to discuss one common thing. However, I can see, because I've been trying to monitor what COPs have been doing, and only the Glasgow COP, the COP26, we could see some light of people agreeing on certain things. But still, there's a long way to go in getting things done. Our Minister Sultan Jaber, who's going to be the president for the COP28, I'm trying to follow him, what he's trying to do. I think he's more flying than being in the country, visiting almost every single country, try to work extremely hard to get the pledges from them saying that, guys, we need to seriously change our attitude. Mm-hmm. We need to be honest in getting things done. And I'm a firm believer it's not about the 1.5 degrees which is going to burn the world, as they say. It's not that. I think it's all about being sincere. How do we preserve the environment? Period.
Yeah.
Whether the melting ice is happening, whether the temperature is rising or not, I don't know who has checked it. That doesn't matter. We need to make sure that we genuinely worry about the environment, worry about the resources that we have today, and how do we preserve them, how do we use them. One of the biggest problems that we talk about all the time is about food security. I don't think we have food security problem. I think we have food production, we have food distribution problem, yeah, and food usage problem. You've got, yeah, huge waste. Even we should be humble to say that also. We as a UAE have a huge problem with food wastage, but we're working very hard making sure that we bring that down. But we need to make sure that food globally get distributed to the people who need. The moment, yeah, we do that thing, I think we have enough food, enough land to plant for everybody to survive, and famine can be eradicated. And these are a few examples. I think COP will, I hope this COP28 will be an inflection point where enough countries come on the board and saying it that we want to make it happen. I know we're relatively a very small country, and we humbly try to do a lot of things, and we're trying to take this message across to everybody, where we bring everybody together to make that change happen, genuinely.
And Maher, in which countries is Al Sarkal Group right now operating? And do you have any expansion plans?
But the region we are asking is because we want to invite you to Switzerland.
Sure. Actually, we, from our arts perspective, we work with a company which is based in Switzerland. I think, the if I remember, the group called Allens Foundation.
Okay.
So we work with them for our arts and dusting, but currently we are based in the UAE, in Oman and Bahrain and Qatar. We've been humbled enough and kind of for people around us because they've seen our sustainability plan, the circular economy plan, the waste management. We've been invited by Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and Kyrgyzstan. So we've already signed MOU with Kazakhstan at this point of time to develop a similar technology for them to help them to eradicate their municipal lines and clean them up. We've been also blessed that we know we've been invited in the last year, B20, G20 in Indonesia. And we signed a few MOUs over there. I had the chance to meet the Minister of Public and Work and Housing over there. And when he looked at what we're trying to do, and he invited us to come and help them to develop, from waste management perspective, their new capital, Nusantara. So we've signed an NDA, and we're holding to move progress in terms of signing an MOU and a contract with them so we can help them. We're already going to be hopefully starting very soon in Bahrain for the waste management. We already signed one MOU with Saudis. We're hoping to sign a couple of more MOUs within Saudi itself on the complete solution of the waste management that we have today. We've been asked to come to a lot of other countries, but we need to be also cognizant of the fact that we have limited hands. So we need, yeah, to make sure that we deliver quality work, first of all, what we want to do. And once we enable that, and we have the digital twins available, that will give us enough room to expand. Of course, our country is making, creating a pivotal road for us to come to France, to go to France and to go to many countries. We've been invited to go to Italy, France as well. Of course, if Switzerland invite us, we will also go there and try to bring a lot of solutions that we have. But I'm sure you guys are well set up over there, and things are happening in the European market. With this, I added luxury to work over there as well, and I know how things are there. But there's also some work need to be done, to be frank, to be honest.
A lot, yeah. And since you're having such a great impact on so many sectors as Al Sarkal Group, what are your commitments to the population of the present and future generation?
Through the work we do, we create, of course, we try to create jobs for people. One of the things for young generation, let's start with the family, first of all. The challenge of the family offices, and you know that very well because you have a family office yourself, and you were, I think, sixth generation, or the fourth generation. I forgot that when we discussed that. We're the fourth generation, but usually family offices don't really last very long. And family offices are a fabric of any economy. It's anything between 70% to 90% of the GDP. So what we're working on is on a program along with the Ministry of Economy, and hats off to them that they're thinking really forward. They have the forward thinking through of creating programs on venture studio building for the family offices of next generation. So we can actually train them on the new way of developing the businesses and the new economic digital way. So we're trying to do that. In the summer program, we invite a lot of children, and we actually train them in many various aspects. This summer will be the second program. We launched the program initially last year, and this year we're trying to launch another second program where we bring all the children and we actually expose them what's going to be the new economy, how does it look like. So we equip them from now on before even they go to the colleges. So they'll be ready for the college. And of course, we see their path through all the way there. And this is what we're trying to do on best of our basis. There are many other things we do. I'm not sure if I'm at liberty to discuss it because it relates to philanthropy things. And I know my chairman and others that like to do these things under the table. So they try to support a lot of people from university perspective. And they're very kind in doing that, to be honest with you.
Amazing. Can you name three reasons why impact businesses and impact investors should consider to establish in UAE?
My hand. I can assure you, you're not the only one who's asking this. I think for the past couple of years, since pandemic, people are saying it, why everybody is flocking to UAE? I think pandemic was a platform where people saw how we try to handle COVID. Those who actually even came in on vacation over here, and they extended their vacation because how we managed the whole situation, starting from the leadership. The entire team of the leadership made sure the life of people over here are taken care of, whether it's food related, whether it's medical equipment or medication required, and all the other facilities. So today, UAE has created an ecosystem. The infrastructure that we have today, it's very viable for investment. And that's why you'll see a lot of people are coming in and investing in UAE. And UAE also, as a strong reason, sits very well geographically, where you actually almost in the center of the world, so that we connect the West and the East together, when you're actually sitting in a country which is very well developed in this infrastructure. You have the world-class airports, and have you been to the airport? I see how the airport is. The telecommunication network is a world-class as well. We're available. So you're able to set up over here and expand your business from here to the neighboring countries as well, and even internationally. So you have very strong connection and access within the 4 or 5 hours to easily 2.8 billion people. So this is the expansion of business. Wow. You can do by sitting in UAE itself. The business environment is very, very friendly and is evolving. As you have seen, the reform that has happened in terms of the work permits, the people now getting golden visas of 10 years. So you can come here if you have, and certain businesses even can own 100% foreign ownership is there available for people. They can do that thing. And of course, these are all the things which is making everybody aware of what UAE is trying to do. And that's why people are flocking in to see, okay, this is a lifestyle I want. You have freedom of establishing anything you want, even from digital economy perspective. Today, UAE is the only government which trying to push for the new economy, whether it's metaverse, whether it's AI. The government adoption, which is happening to the new technology carefully, not everything as it copy-paste, but carefully. Yeah. So Dubai was the first city to launch a metaverse assembly last year in September, over 2 days. We flocked so many professionals. And because of that today, because of the ecosystem was created, you have a lot of people coming in and starting their companies of Web3, blockchain, AI, yeah. Name it, just from UAE. And those are the things which are making it really happen.
That was very convincing, I must say, sir.
We are moving there, but Maher knows that.
Well, the time is running, gentlemen. So last call to action. Could you please share, Maher, what would be the call to action and message to our global audience? What should they do or what they shouldn't?
I think a very, very important message I would leave to all of us with two messages. One is we need to open our eyes to the truth and fact of whatever is going on globally. What I mean by that, which is leading to my second point, how do we actually help each other as human beings? How do we make sure this fairness and equality really prosper everywhere? How do we make sure that we treat each other without looking at the background of their ethnicity or color of skin or even religion? And this is the same message that our leaders are today trying to do. How do we become peaceful across everywhere? How do we shed those people who are losing their lives? How do we make the life of people better? Economically, a lot of people are going through really difficult challenges. How do we touch them? How do we reach them out? And how do we make sure that as people, we convince our government in a very peaceful manner that, you know, we all need to live in peace? I think peace is the only message I would like to leave all of us with.
Wow.
That's very, very wise. And thank you for this amazing message, Maher.
Thank you so very much. It was absolute privilege to have you here again, and we should talk very soon again.
Yeah, and we hope to see you there very, very soon. And yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for hosting me. It's very kind of you. I'm looking forward to meet you guys back again when you come to Dubai. I'll take you to one of our places that we have, a Sirkal Avenue, where you will see all the arts and so forth. And I'm sure if you've not been there, you will really like the place. This is one of the things that we've created. And it was warehouses, and we transformed it completely, which is an amazing and happy place, which is the fifth largest place in the UAE. It's called the Sirkal Avenue.
Okay.
Would be a pleasure to go there. Thank you, Ivan. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Dear viewers, with this, we finished the first episode of Season 7. I hope you learned something new about impact investing in UAE from one of the visionary business leaders.
And next week, we will travel to another very ancient country. Thank you for watching us.
You can always reach us on apply@iasolutions.ch. We are always there for you. And bye for now. Enjoy your summer. Hey, we hope you have been inspired by the remarkable stories that shape impact investing worldwide.
Make sure you subscribe to our channel not to miss any future episodes.
Contact us if you want to support our guests or be the next TV show guest yourself.
Join the awesome impact community and invite your friends to do the same.
You can find us on TikTok, LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, podcast, anywhere in your favorite social media.
We look forward to sharing the next episode with you. And remember,
together we create a truly sustainable future.